welcome back to another week of the Young Turks, the post-Labor Day week. And we actually have some stories directly about that, actually. Although not necessarily in the U.S. context. Labor struggles continue around the globe. And so we're gonna visit one of those. Anna Kasparian joining me in the first hour. I'll be joining you in the second hour.
I'm so excited about today's show because it's just me and John. Like, no offense to anyone else. I love all the other hosts.
Little
we
bit
all
of
have
offense.
A good... But like John and I, like I don't know, we just kind of, he gets it, he gets it.
Not like that. This is going to be a little preview of the Fusion show, perhaps. Although I guess in that it won't just be me and you.
No, but in the Fusion show, we're just going to talk about how much we love Hillary, right?
That's what I've heard, actually.
Yeah, because
to be fair, we're getting paid to do it,
or something.
Or I don't know, cancer. I don't know, something. Anyway. Okay, more conspiracy theories over the course of today. Lots of great stories we got to get to. We have a little bit of Hillary. She has a coughing fit, which reveals that she's either dying or a lizard person. So that's going to be cool. Let's see. Donald Trump is attacking people's looks.
Mm-hmm.
That should be fun.
And ironic, yeah.
A little bit. Okay, a little preview about what some of the presidential elections might look like, how the moderators are approaching it, and a little bit of fun involving Gary Johnson and Cornell. Should be a little bit of fun.
Yes.
People doing the right thing.
Yes. Oh,
young Republicans. Anyway, we're going to get to all that over the course of this hour. Then we're going to have an awesome second hour.
Yeah,
and
we
are. Post game. And I'm already getting excited about what we might talk about.
It's going to be fun. By the way, I promised Cenk I would do this, and I think it's important for you guys to know. So let me pass on the note. So Cenk is out of town, as you guys probably can already figure out. However, on Wednesday night, he's going to be on the late night show with Seth Meyers. So definitely check that out. I know I will. I'm really curious to see how that goes. So Wednesday night, late night with Seth Meyers.
That's true. And Wednesday night after the show, I think we've already previewed this. We should probably preview it formally. We're going to have the first town hall in the presidential election. The commander-in-chief town hall. It's going to have Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump because they couldn't fit in any other people. Just cause you only got two. You can only do two. For some reason. But anyway, they're going to be asking questions having to do with being commander-in-chief, national security, foreign policy, and stuff like that. So we're going to be doing live commentary on that, not just me and Anna. We're going to have other people as well after the main show tomorrow evening, actually. So that's going to be live, obviously. Okay, lots of important stories to get to. We have crammed this rundown full of stuff, but me and Anna, we usually go through it pretty
fast. We go
pretty
quickly,
so we're going to
try
to cover as much as we can, actually. Okay, we're going to be starting off with the Dakota Access Pipeline, though. The protests over the Dakota Access Pipeline construction continue in advance of a judge's ruling about the future of the project. That's coming up in just a few days. The protest, though, is no smaller than it was weeks ago. Like, people are not backing down. I've heard estimates of 4,000 or more people still on site around the construction trying to stop it from proceeding. And it's actually started to get a little bit violent, although not from the protesters' side. Private security companies have moved in suspiciously, many reports saying, as police presence has evacuated the area. Suddenly, the private security comes in, equipped with tear gas, with attack dogs. The police are nowhere to be found. Where'd the police go? Who knows? But anyway, we're going to have some footage from there. Our political reporter, Jordan Cheriton, has been on location at the protest, talking with some of those who've been involved in the protests. We want to show you some pictures first, though. If we could jump to these, I want to show you the pictures of these dogs. Because I'm a fan of dogs. I love dogs. Dogs should never be used in this context,
Jeez.
Though. For people exercising their constitutional rights who are just trying to have their voices heard against a company that seems to believe that if this pipeline is not completed in the next 5 minutes, the country will explode. And so you see their dogs moving in.
Yeah, so they're essentially sicking dogs on protesters who have the audacity to be a little upset about the fact that they're destroying historic land, that they're destroying burial property. So, you know, land where their loved ones have been buried has been screwed with. And so understandably, people are going to be upset. They're going to protest it. And this is not, you know, a protest over something insignificant. This is something that, you know, has victimized a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so understandably, they should be able to practice their First Amendment rights to go out there and say what they need to say and be heard. But to respond to those protesters with this type of violence is sickening. And I know you have more details on that.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, they're talking about both their past, which is being disrupted, and also the future of what is going to happen to this land, what's going to happen to these communities. And so we told you that there was already the one court case. We talked about this over the past couple of weeks. There's another, actually. Over the weekend, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe filed an emergency motion asking the court to halt construction of the pipeline. In one filing, Tim Mentz Sr., who helped start the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Tribal Historic Preservation Office, said bulldozers had likely dug through burial grounds with little regard and without allowing members of the tribe a chance to look for human remains. Because those human remains had the lack of foresight to be buried in an area where some rich people would like to transport oil. And again, this has been going on for months and months and months and months now. Some of the legal action has been going on for even longer than that, but the protests have been going on for months, and there's still extremely little media attention to this.
Yeah.
Even sicking attack dogs on people. We've got actual violence. Isn't that what the news always likes? You've got the blood, okay? Shouldn't it leads if it bleeds or whatever? Even then, not getting much news coverage. But in response to that emergency filing, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which did approve the project, by the way, and has been criticized because of that, says it does not oppose the temporary halt of construction on the Dakota Access Pipeline, and specifically because of the recent violence, they say. The Corps acknowledges that the public interest would be served by preserving peace near Lake Oahe until the court can render its well-considered opinion on plaintiff's motion for preliminary injunction. The Corps, therefore, does not oppose this short and discreet temporary restraining order. And in case you don't know the background, we've sort of alluded to it, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, representing other tribes and nations as well, is worried that the pipeline will negatively impact water quality on its reservation and imperil cultural heritage sites.
Well, I mean, that's already starting to happen.
Exactly.
Right?
The construction has been proceeding.
So their concerns have already been confirmed, right? And it's just, look, just to touch on the topic that you brought up about the media not covering this. I mean, I think that there's a pretty clear reason for why they don't cover stories like this. I mean, you watch some of the mainstream news networks, and what you see over and over again are ads for natural gas or oil companies or coal companies. And oftentimes, they're not even really selling you anything in those ads. It's just their way to fund these networks to ensure that they don't get negative coverage, which is why there's been very little coverage of this in the mainstream media. And it's really an example of how, you know, so-called journalism has been tainted by this financial model, this financial structure.
Yeah.
The whole point of journalism from the very beginning was to be a muckraker, right? To go after big corporations, businesses that are not doing right by the people. And right now, that's exactly what's happening, and the media is not covering it. So what's the point of being a news network if you're not going to cover the news?
Exactly. Yeah, it's weird. You see those ads for like the oil companies, and I called up. I tried to buy a barrel of light sweet crude, and they wouldn't sell it to me. It's almost as if I had nothing to do with the whole thing. It's weird how that works out.
I mean, you watch the news, and it's like one of two things. It's either oil or gas companies or super beta prostate. Like, those
exactly.
are the ads that you see over and over again. Super beta prostate, because it's an aging demographic that's watching mainstream media, and then also you know, the major corporations that don't want negative coverage.
Either way, they're concerned with your pipes. yes, and so like we said, the main court like filing basically that we're awaiting the decision on, that's going to come up on September 9th. So that's Judge Boersberg is considering this right now and has said in advance of this that there appears to have been a lack of communication between the Corps of Engineers and the tribes, and the failure of the Corps of Engineers' part on the Corps of Engineers' part to perform the due diligence in the process and the development of this project. That's what the tribe has been saying. The judge will render his decision on September 9th, and he set September 14th as a date for appeal if either side is not happy with his decision. And by the way, I saw there's a meme going around of the corporate backers for this project, the investors in it, and it's just a list of the biggest banks, the stereotypical list. And so that's one of the reasons why the media isn't covering it. It's also one of the reasons why many politicians are just mum about it. It's interesting. It doesn't really concern them for some reason.
Private security entities are sicking dogs on people who are practicing their First Amendment rights, and there's no coverage of it. I mean, it's just injustice after injustice with this story.
Exactly. Now, because these protests are going on, TYT sent its political reporter, Jordan Cheriton, who's been on location with his team, speaking with some of those involved in the protests. We've got a couple of videos that we want to show you. In the first, he's speaking with Happy, who chained himself to a pipeline at the site. So let's watch that.
Water is life! 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 Water is life!
You put your body on the line. You chained yourself to the pipeline that was being constructed. We
we needed to be, or our presence needed to be there. And, you know, I couldn't stand by and like watch them build a pipeline and dig up the earth and put the pipe in the ground. I couldn't sit by and watch that. It's a tough thing to watch, you know, whenever you're, it's all you think about, you know, it's always on my mind. It's like whenever I dream, I'm dreaming about how I can help out here and what's going on here. You know, it's like everything, I'm consumed with this issue. Mm-hmm. And they need to do something to stop it. And it's just unbelievable, you know, of how far we have to go now. There were people there, one of the workers there were saying, I know how to get them off. All we have to do is turn on the machine and, you know, move the arm around and see how long he lasts.
And so there's basically fear for your life.
Yeah, there was, you know, there was a fear, a good fear of life, but there was also the same emotions that affect me daily here, you know, with the angry frustration.
Jeez. I know how to get him off. We just kill him with heavy machinery. That'll get him off.
Yeah, I mean, look, the protests, from what I've read and what I've seen, have been peaceful protests, right? And again, they've been met with violence. That man's interpretation of what's been going on, you know, just perfectly describes the type of violent action that's been proposed against him just for protesting something that, you know, really puts land that means something to him and his community in jeopardy.
Yeah. Yeah, and without the due process that they think they should have, the consideration right. for the historic significance, the spiritual significance of the land. So Jordan also talked with a pair of siblings who are also involved in this chaining to the equipment. So let's switch to that now.
The people who ran away this morning when they saw you, do you think they just simply don't care about your people and your land and your culture?
Well, they run away really fast. Never seen these workers. I've been in other places and other actions, but seeing these workers running away so fast, it gave me an idea of the strength of the people. Like I say before, we don't have guns, we don't have bombs, but we have our bodies, we have our commitment, we have our prayers, and we have our actions.
You know, my grandma fought in the Battle of Little Bighorn, and she fought, you know, soldiers and to protect her family, so I can't expect nothing less of myself.
We all drink water. You know, Creator gives this water, you know, as our first medicine to all the nations from the north to the south, you know. So where are we here? To protect what is sacred, too. There is a lot of sacred places around this area, you know, and this pipeline will desecrate those places, will destroy those places.
They don't understand that the earth doesn't belong to us. We belong to Mother Earth. We're her children, and we need to do everything we can to protect her and make sure, you know, that she's here for our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And they need to have that safe drinking water. It's not, you can't drink water, you can't drink money, you can't drink oil. You need water to survive. Water is life.
So it continues on in advance of September 9th, and then certainly it will be appealed regardless of who the judge rules in favor of. That won't be the end of the process until the 14th and probably going on after that. And it sucks to watch these people, their way of life, their community, their land, the access to water, that's their access to water is in that area. If that ends up getting destroyed or contaminated, then they're just SOL, they got no water, is just like a speed bump in the view of the executives of this massive corporation. And we are on the cusp right now of being able to switch over to clean, renewable energy. Mm-hmm. That the price of solar power has been going down insanely over just the past few years. Like, we're almost ready to switch over. And there are some people who, I read the CEO of the company, she lives in this like 20,000 square foot mansion with a pole vaulting pit and a 200-person private theater where her and her friends do these private theater productions and things like that, which sounds lovely. It sounds like an amazing way to live your life. And so all of these other people, it's just get the fuck out of the way. We got to put this pipeline in so we can be even more grotesquely wealthy.
I know. That's the part of it that really bothers me, because this is all in an effort to gain more wealth. So at what price? I mean, you're destroying the environment. You're potentially destroying the lives of these individuals who rely on that land, who rely on that water to survive. And you're already fabulously wealthy. Like, why do you need more? I get it, right? Everyone wants to be wealthy. I want to be wealthy, right? Yeah. But at what cost? And it's incredible how many people lack any principles or any human empathy toward others. I think you have to be a pretty ruthless person to push forward and do what this corporation is doing to these people.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, we understand everybody, we need energy. We're a country that demands it for transportation, for entertainment, for all of that. But we can get it through other means. Solar energy, wind energy, geothermal. There are so many options. We're a country that when it's necessary, there's no limit to what we can achieve, what we can develop, that we can lead the way on these sorts of technology. And we are choosing not to as a country because either we are personally profiting from crude, dirty, traditional forms of energy, or we've taken some of that money and we've bought off the politicians to stop any innovation from actually happening. And so in this particular case, it's obviously far more personal for these people, but it's just one of the consequences of the way we approach our energy production in this country. Okay, let's take a trip around the world. Other struggles going on. Over the Labor Day weekend, a massive labor protest happened in India. And in fact, many are saying that this might be the largest strike in the history of humanity. The scale of it is it's difficult to comprehend, but we want to talk about why this strike happened and who is taking part. Union officials said about 180 million workers,
Jesus,
including state bank employees, school teachers, postal workers, miners, and construction workers, were participating, but the figure could not be independently verified. But we do know that thousands of state-run banks, government offices, and factories were closed on Friday, and public transport disrupted, although the union leaders made clear that essential services in terms of water production and availability and energy and things like that were maintained, although this is... That's like 70% of the workforce of America choosing to strike on one day. They're not looking to make the regular citizens of India suffer, obviously. They're just trying to make their voice heard. And this strike came after Prime Minister Narendra Modi began a push for increased foreign investment and privatization of some state-run industries. Unions fear these policies will undermine both wages and unemployment. And there is some evidence that that would actually be the case, that these workers, many of whom are suffering under conditions that American workers can't even conceive of, it could actually become worse for them if this path was continued down.
Right. I love that this strike is happening, and I know that with most strikes and most protests that are actually effective, they're inconvenient. And I know they're going to be inconvenient for India's population in general, but it's important that this happens, right? And so I feel like this is the natural way labor experiences progress in various countries. That's what happened here in the United States, where we had strikes, where we had protests, where labor unions got together and started fighting for fair working conditions, safe working conditions. Right now, one of the reasons why so many major U.S. companies are outsourcing jobs to countries like India or China is because labor's a lot cheaper there. And part of the reason why labor's a lot cheaper is because people get away with paying, you know, their employees tiny, tiny amounts of money in unsafe working conditions. And I just think that this is just the natural process of how things are supposed to go. And I hope that they get real change in the country. I know that it's not necessarily the way things have been working out so far that's kind of pushing them to protest. But I think, you know, their fears of what the future could be like will hopefully change things for the better in general.
Yeah, and so there's some word that in advance of the protests, when the scale of it was starting to be understood inside of India, that some sort of consolations were given in advance. But the union leaders were like, no, we're continuing with this. We're going to fight for what we think is fair. We're going to give you some of those numbers, actually. The head of one of the unions actually was quoted as saying, Prime Minister Narendra Modi said his fight is with poverty, but it seems his fight is with the poor in this country. Now, look, you can have different philosophies about how exactly you improve the condition of the working people, of the poor in India or in the U.S., and that's totally fair. And obviously, there are some industries where it doesn't make sense to have government control. We don't think that the government should provide all employment. But in a country that doesn't necessarily have the history or the legislation to protect workers, where exploitation is not theoretical, where it is an everyday reality, you cannot simply give up these industries to people who are going to pay starvation wages to literally over 100 million workers. And so we can't simply look at it from our point of view and say, well, then why can't they have the same sort of balance between private and public employment as we have here? They're on a very different historical arc. And we
they have different laws, and they lack the laws necessary to protect their workers. By the way, the same laws that our unions fought for here in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
And so I know that now I'm making this about the U.S., but I just want to get this point across. For anyone who gets angry about unions, that doesn't believe in things like collective bargaining, understand what unions have done for the American worker here in the U.S., right? Yeah. It's incredibly important. And, you know, the situation in India is different, but I could totally understand the fear of privatizing, you know, certain job opportunities. It would be a disaster, especially when you consider what private industries are paying Indian workers right now as we speak.
Yeah, exactly. And look, regardless of a year from now, 10 years from now, what ends up happening, it's always better to have more involvement in government with regular people. Mm-hmm. That's never been a terrible thing, so long as it's peaceful, and this is. And so that's something that we should be enthusiastic about. I want to give you some of the numbers that they're considering during these protests, because it's going to really put it into a good comparison with the current situation in the U.S. The strike was called after talks with Finance Minister Arun Jaitley broke down, with union leaders rejecting his offer to raise the minimum wage for unskilled workers from the equivalent of $96 wow. per month to $136 per month. Obviously, the cost of purchasing things in India is also very different. But we're talking about worlds of difference in the day-to-day experience. They're not talking for exorbitant amounts of money. Now, for overall the workers, the amount was a little bit higher, something like a little bit less than double that. Mm-hmm. But this is for unskilled workers who are making almost nothing at present. And that's not to mention all of the lacking of benefits and things like that. The union said that the government should guarantee both Social Security and health care for all, and should be hiking the minimum wage to double what it is offering in order to keep up with inflation. So they're concerned with wages. They're also concerned with everything outside of wages, which, of course, they're also not receiving the benefit of at this point.
Yeah, I think overall these protests are good, and I hope it leads to not just what they're asking for, which is not privatizing certain industries, but that it improves the wages of people who are working in the private sector as well. It just needs to happen. And I think, again, this is the natural progression of things.
Yeah. And I hope that if they're wildly successful and they get all that they're looking for, that 50 or 60 or 70 years can go by and a new generation of people can just spit at the name of unions and forget all the things that they fought for and all the things that they gave us that we enjoy every single day.
Like the weekend. Well, we don't enjoy the weekend every day.
Lack of child labor, a 40-hour work week.
Right.
Insurance, all of those things. Aren't they delightful? And screw you unions for fighting for those things and being willing to have your skull cracked.
Yeah.
Okay, let's fit in one more conversation before we go to the break. It's an interesting little development. The College Republicans at Cornell found themselves in what has become, for College Republicans, a fairly typical situation. They are Republicans and they're conservatives, but at the same time, their nominee for the presidency is Donald Trump, which puts them in a bit of a bind. And so at Cornell, the College Republicans have now released their endorsement for the presidency, and it's gotten them in a little bit of trouble. Why should become abundantly clear to you. We're going to read some sections from this press release that they put out. Our organization does not solely represent the Republican Party. Our first responsibility is to our members, libertarians, moderates, neoconservatives, and everyone in between. We value our ideological diversity and welcome differing perspectives. The Cornell Republicans cannot, in good faith, endorse our party's nominee. Mr. Trump should not be the face of American conservatism. Instead, we are proud to endorse the true conservative in the election, Gary Johnson. While we do not agree with all of his positions, we firmly support his devotion to free trade, states' rights, and other conservative principles. His straight candor and polite conduct contrast with Mr. Trump's visceral rhetoric and angry demeanor. And so they put this out, making clear that although they are part of the Republican Party, they plan to be Republicans. At this point, they cannot endorse the Republican nominee, and so they're going for Gary Johnson, which has led to them losing their certification as part of the College Republican Network across the country.
Right. I am so proud of these students. I can't even, because first of all, understand that this network of Republican organizations is very much the cheerleader of the Republican Party, regardless of who the candidate is, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a symptom of what I think is this virus in our political system, which forces you to play party politics. And some people have a mind of their own, and they don't believe in party politics. They don't believe in just being a cheerleader for one party, regardless of, you know, what type of ridiculous policy ideas come from that party.
Yeah.
And so, look, I guess, generally speaking, I'm a Democrat. But I don't like the Democratic candidate too much right now.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what I'm going to do, but I certainly am not going to go around endorsing her.
Yeah.
So I like that they have a mind of their own. I like that, you know, they're doing what they feel is right. And this is based on principles. And any organization that behaves based on principles has my praise. Now, that's not to say that I agree with them or that Gary Johnson is the candidate that I would vote for. I'm not a fan of Gary Johnson either. But nonetheless, if that's the politician that they feel reflects their party in a more positive way, then sure, go ahead and endorse him. I feel like that's the right way to go about it. Yeah. It shows that they have a mind of their own, and I love that.
Exactly. Although if we actually broke down policies with them, we'd probably disagree with quite a few.
No, I disagree with them exactly. On almost all policies. I disagree with Gary Johnson when it comes to his fiscal conservatism, right?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I mean, if this is how they really identify, then they should endorse the candidate that they identify with.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got to admire that these are young people, politically active, willing to join an organization like the College Republicans, which has got to be a death sentence for much of your dating in college, but they're willing to do it. And there's also an element of self-preservation here, because these are people who, some of them, they say neoconservatives, moderates, maybe some of them are moderates, but they want conservatism to be popular and for more people to be conservatives. And so
good luck
you
with
can't
that.
Have someone like Donald Trump being the face of conservatism in the modern day. Whether he loses the election or wins the election, simply him being out there, being the representative of the Republican Party, that hurts the brand. And that's one of the reasons that you see that identification as a Republican, and indeed as a conservative, is lower than it's been historically. It's because of people like this being the face of the party. And so it makes sense for them to distance themselves from him, even though for them personally, it's both immediately gotten them decertified. And then for many of them, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, you know the amount of strike back the Republicans have. The individuals who've signed on to this might find someday, if they run for office, they're going to have some problems in the Republican Party.
I actually disagree with that. I mean, look, it's a possibility. But I think what this story also demonstrates, which I absolutely love, is this stark contrast between, you know, older political figures and younger, younger individuals who are interested in politics, mm-hmm. right? And so young people are interested in third-party candidates. Young people don't play ball.
I got some stats for you on that, too.
Oh, we'll get to the stats, because okay. I've read them, too, and they're really interesting. Young people will not play ball with traditional politics. They want to shake things up because they're more concerned with identity as opposed to, you know, political or party identification, mm-hmm. right? And what I mean by identity is, what are the policies that you find appealing, right? And if there's a politician who happens to be from your party that doesn't really represent the policy ideas that you like, why would you support that person? Old school politics, traditional politics would say, hey, whatever, you got to do what you got to do. This is the candidate that we have. But no, I love that young people aren't going to buy into that.
Yeah.
So even if I disagree with them on their policy ideas, which I do to a pretty great extent, I still love that they have a mind of their own and they're pushing back against this notion that they have to support Trump just because he's a Republican. Yeah.
So let's talk about the decertification, because they've basically gotten the axe from the national organization. These college Republicans at any individual university obviously report back to the national organization. And you might say, well, this certainly seems like a violation of their free speech rights. Again, although it's the Republican Party, it's a private organization. It has nothing to do with the government, and so free speech really doesn't apply here. They said the New York Federation of College Republicans put out a statement saying clubs are within their right not to endorse certain candidates within the party and decide to reallocate their resources down the ballot. What is unacceptable, however, is using a party-affiliated organization as a tool to support another party's candidate in an election, whomever that candidate may be and whatever office the election may be for. And I read into that a little bit of, we totally understand, but we can't have you supporting a Libertarian Party candidate. And look, I understand where they're coming from.
I do too.
They get money. I mean, so they did the right thing,
yeah.
Even though they can't be decertified as a result.
What I wonder, though, is whether or not the New York Federation of College Republicans understands how destructive their behavior is, right? So if you have, I don't know, like a chimpanzee running for the Republican ticket, like, are you going to go ahead and support him just because he identifies as a Republican? I mean, how stupid is that reasoning?
Some percentage would.
I know. And by the way, it's not...
They share a lot of our DNA. Closest relative.
That's true. It's not indicative of the Republican Party. I mean, you have Democrats who use the same type of so-called logic in pushing for a candidate who might not even represent the party in the best way. Mm-hmm. And it drives me crazy. No, we should expect better of our candidates, yeah. right? We should demand more. We shouldn't just, you know, go ahead, put our arms in the air and go ahead and vote for whoever ends up being the nominee. I think Trump is a disaster. I think Hillary Clinton is a disaster. I don't blame anyone who identifies with either party and refuses to vote for either candidate.
Yeah, and so the obvious follow-up to this is then saying, well, doesn't it seem like a lot of young Democrats would want to not endorse Hillary Clinton and instead go for someone like Jill Stein or some other candidate?
Yeah.
Maybe even some of them might prefer Gary Johnson, although I think that that's bananas. They are totally free to do that. They'll probably be decertified as a result of it.
Yeah.
But if they want to make a statement, that's what college activism is supposed to be about. It's about exploring your options, trying to redefine what American politics is about, to try to make a big change while you still have the energy that people like me who go to sleep as soon as I go home, we don't have anymore. You're supposed to be out there making that change.
You make such a good point. And what we've lost on college campuses is this praise towards students who use critical thinking, right? Like, we don't want them to think critically about anything. We want to put them in these neat little boxes where we can predict exactly how they're going to vote, what they're going to think, how they're going to behave. No, I don't want that. I want you young people to mix shit up. And that's exactly what's happening here, and it's great.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the numbers. I did allude to that. An Investor Business Daily TIPP poll completed on September 1st put Gary Johnson's support amongst 18 to 24-year-olds at 33%. Pretty high. One out of three of the youngest voters do support him, which is ahead of Trump at 17%. It's actually twice what Trump has amongst those youngest voters. Jill Stein has 13% and Hillary Clinton at 37%. So Hillary Clinton narrowly has the lead there. But considering that Gary Johnson is polling generally at 8 to 11%, doesn't get much news coverage, isn't going to be included at this week's town hall, for one out of three young voters to support him is pretty amazing. And it speaks to the power of social media and the proliferation of news organically, obviously. Of course, what the bad thing for him is that 18 to 24-year-olds unfortunately vote at the lowest rate out of any voters, which is another thing that we need to change, and perhaps getting more people involved in politics like these college Republicans and Democrats is one way to do that, and college green parties and libertarians and all that. Anyway, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, lots of important news to get to. Hillary Clinton coughs and the entire country watches. We're going to cover that. And let's see. Oh, Chris Wallace of Fox News is going to be a moderator at a debate. If somebody lies on stage, what's he going to do? He's going to let us know after this break. Welcome back, everybody. Lots more to come in the first hour of the Young Turks. You have an update.
I do. So I was just told that Cenk will be taping the Seth Meyers show on Wednesday, but it will air on Thursday. So Late Night with Seth Meyers, Thursday with Cenk. Check it out. Make sure you don't miss it.
Sounds good. Okay, lots of tweets came in on the stories that we talked about in the first half of the first hour. I'm going to try to read some names I don't normally read. People always think that I selectively only choose certain names. That's what pops up here, man. You just got to be clever. Steph Moss says, so keen for a full show with Anna Kasparian and Johnny Arola. Feels like an intimate gathering, and I like it. And we like that you watch. Anyway.
Thanks, God, as my dad would say.
Christina Oakes, great point. Where the fuck were the attack dogs during Clive and Bundy's standoff?
Oh, such a good point.
Where were the attack dogs? Were they protecting water? No, they hadn't paid their fucking taxes. That's what happened.
But the Clive and Bundy protesters were literally violent. Like, they were armed and talking about how they planned on killing people, right? And they weren't met with violence, which, by the way, I don't favor anyone being met with violence. So I'm not saying, they should have been violent toward them. But please don't go after peaceful protesters who are protesting something totally legitimate. Don't meet them with violence.
Yeah, and the thing is, your automatic response is to say, well, so if at the Dakota Access Pipeline, they should just had guns. But the thing is that they're protesting for something kind of libby, so it doesn't even matter. If they had guns, they would just shot them all. It's weird. It's the complete hypocrisy there.
I know.
I'm not saying that they are all libs, but the goal to protect water and land and everything.
They sounded pretty libby. Let's keep
probably,
it real.
Probably libs.
Like Mother Earth, the water.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Baked Slice Mahoney says, a world-breaking labor strike during the American Labor Day weekend. I feel like the universe is using its sense of humor for good. Yes, and you would imagine that, I understand that most sources of media don't like covering international news because they don't know as much about it. That's one of the reasons we cover less. I know about 1/1000th about India that I do about America. But it was on Labor Day weekend. That's an easy in for you. Show some pictures of people eating hot dogs and then show the strikes in India. That's an easy in. Anytime. And Alex C. says, every time I see the MSM fail at doing their jobs, I'm so grateful to have alternative sources.
And thank you so much.
And we are one of your sources.
We're thankful for you guys, because without you, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. Like, let's just keep it 100, right? Yeah.
Especially the members.
We don't have the big oil companies advertising on our show.
I'm trying, man.
There's a reason for that.
I'm trying.
Right? And, no.
They don't return my emails.
We don't want that. We don't want that.
Okay, so one last thing. Really interesting interview. Wes Clark Jr. interviewed Julissa Arce. She was an undocumented, this is crazy. She was an undocumented college student from Texas who landed an internship with Goldman Sachs, which she turned into a job at Goldman after college, eventually becoming a vice president by age 27. All of this without proof of legal residency. She's undocumented, 27-year-old vice president at Goldman Sachs. Now she's got a book out called My Underground American Dream, My True Story as an Undocumented Immigrant Who Became a Wall Street Executive. So you're going to be able to see that at 9:15 Eastern Time, 6:15 Pacific Time. Go to tytnetwork.com/tytinterviews.
Where did she immigrate from?
I don't know from this, unfortunately.
Okay.
But well, that is amazing.
She can't be Mexican because, remember, they're rapists and criminals.
All of them.
Yeah.
They're not sending their best.
They're not sending their best.
By the way, I love the implicit conspiracy theory slash racism in their sending. As if the government is like rounding up people and then just pushing them out. It's not that people are willing to risk death and economic hardship to improve the lives of the next generation of their family.
Why?
It's such a fucking sick way to look at it.
Why did Nieto have Trump visit? Like,
it's infuriating.
I was listening to Left, Right, and Center, which is, you know,
I used to listen to that.
Yeah, it's a good podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, it has various perspectives on, and sometimes there are conservatives on there that make me like lose my mind. But the latest episode talked about Trump's visit to Mexico. And I mean, he totally used Mexico's president as a tool.
Yeah.
And a weapon.
And a weapon, it's sad.
Old
okay, let's jump back into the news. Lots to get to. Over the weekend, many outlets, including NBC News, reported that Hillary Clinton had started coughing while on the campaign trail. Now, I've looked into this, and they did that because there's a lot of people who believe crazy shit about her health, mm-hmm. who think that she could die any minute, or possibly is a lizard person who is rejecting the human shell that she's currently inhabiting. And for some reason, in the modern day, appealing to those sorts of conspiracy theorists is very popular, so even the very most reputable news sources were covering this. So we want to be fair to them, though.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at the video of Hillary Clinton coughing and see if this is world-shaking election news. Let's find out here.
I want to thank Congresswoman Marsha Fudge for hosting us. I've been talking so... Every time I think about Trump, I get allergic.
Okay, that's not a bad cover, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, so she's coughing, but wait, hold the commentary. It turns out this is a recurring thing, which you're going to see in this video.
He won't tell us where he owes $650 million. There's a lot of rumors about that. And he has, you know, made it clear that he doesn't particularly care whether Putin and the intelligence services attack American institutions. So, get some water.
Yep.
Thank you. Thanks. Excuse me.
So she's like,
where did she run off to?
She's severely ill, right?
Like, that's what I've heard.
She's not fit to be president because she keeps coughing.
Well, the funny thing is that I get that, like, okay, so the theory's out there that she's about to die or whatever. But what they always say is that she has a brain injury, that she has Alzheimer's or something, which I don't think leads you to cough. So I don't know how exactly this plays into the theory. But the thing
God.
That, so I don't care about the coughing, but it's that NBC News and other organizations are like, headline, she keeps coughing, oh my God. And they're doing that to appeal to the craziest people on the internet right now.
Look, the only thing that I found suspect about the videos that we just showed you was that in the first one, as she was coughing, she still had her mic held to her mouth.
That's a bad idea. Don't
do
that.
You're coughing. Put the mic down. Continue coughing. But look, here's what happens when you have a coughing fit while you're in the middle of doing a public speaking event, right? You get embarrassed. Like, I had that happen to me numerous times. I did a TED Talk, and it happened in the middle of my TED Talk.
Oh, God.
And it doesn't mean that I have Alzheimer's. It doesn't mean that I'm violently ill. It doesn't mean anything. It means that I just had a coughing fit. When I get a cold and I develop a cough, it takes me months to get over the cough. That's
really?
The only thing that will Jeez. Linger. And it varies from one person to another. Some people get over it right away. For me, it lingers so long that I don't even mess around. Like, I go to the doctor and I'm like, give me that codeine right now.
Yeah.
Right now. Okay? And it makes me feel real nice, too. But...
This is what the voters need to know about,
not
the codeine
promote,
addiction.
Drug use, unless you have a bad cough and you need that codeine.
But
anyway,
or if it makes you feel really good.
Exactly. Okay, yeah. But here's the one thing that I do want to say. Look, there are so many things to attack Hillary Clinton on, substance-wise, right? So if you...
Like what, sneezing?
Sneezing, the pantsuits.
What
if
she like cringes, like she's feeling pain? What about that?
You can attack her on so many policy-related issues,
like
right? You are ridiculous right now. Okay,
sorry.
So if you are upset at her financial ties to Wall Street, if you're mad at, you know, her foundation, if you are upset with some of her foreign policy ideas, choices, and past, I'm all for it, okay? I will engage in that conversation because it's a conversation worth having. If you are a member of the media, it's important to engage in that kind of conversation because, again, it's fact-based, and it leads to actual, you know, I don't know, it's productive. It's way more productive than conspiracy theories regarding her cough. It makes you look like a clown when you believe conspiracy theories related to her cough. She's a human. She's 68 years old. She's traveling the country, mostly doing fundraising to keep it 100 with you, right? But that kind of behavior is taxing on anyone, much less someone who's 68 years old. So is she...
Bernie coughed. He doesn't become a bad candidate because of that.
It's just so stupid. And so I know that there are, you know, even Democrats, like liberals who hate Hillary, who are latching onto this ridiculous conspiracy theory. I get it. You don't like Hillary. There are, again, a lot of things to attack her on. If you start believing into conspiracy theories, then I just feel like you get into questionable territory. No, you've already been in questionable territory. Get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, I mean, like, if she was perfectly healthy, is she less corrupt? Well, then the health doesn't have anything to do with it. The only argument I could see is if you had evidence, if Guccifer releases evidence showing she knows she's about to die, then she should have stepped down so that Bernie could be the nominee. But that evidence doesn't exist. Coughing on video and people becoming armchair diagnosticians or computer chair diagnosticians, that is not the evidence. If the evidence does come, different story. But we're not at that point.
You know, and people are bringing up the fact that she had a bad stomach flu and that she had a fall and then she suffered a concussion and then she had a blood clot. Yeah, she's 68 years old, okay? If you guys are uncomfortable with that, then let's go ahead and nominate people that are in their 20s. You don't want that either, right? People have health conditions later in life. It's part of life.
We should start nominating younger people.
I mean,
it's
I'm not against that, okay, to be honest with you, but...
Nothing against older people.
I also don't want 20-year-olds running for president, just keeping...
Yeah, probably not. No, but I'm saying, like, younger people might understand the struggles of a wider swath of the
country. I agree with you on that.
Nothing against older people.
But at the same time, Bernie Sanders is an older, or was an older candidate, and he understood the struggles of, you know, working class and middle class Americans. And so I don't think that it's necessarily dependent on age, but we also have to understand that as you get older, you start suffering from, you know, certain health conditions or whatever.
Yeah.
We have no evidence indicating that she is unfit to be a president based on her health, okay? If there is evidence, then I will change my mind and say, that's a little problematic. By the way, Donald Trump, who keeps picking at the fact that she's coughing, does he want to release his medical records and show us whether or not he's healthy? He had some clown so-called doctor write a letter that actually sounded like Donald Trump wrote it, right? So I don't believe for a second that he has no health problems. He's, what, in his 70s now, isn't he?
I think he's 69.
Oh, 69?
The only people we know for sure super healthy, Gary Johnson is a mountain climber.
Yeah.
And I saw that video of Bernie running to catch a train, and he was just running through the subway. Nobody can run like that could possibly be in bad health.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, let's move on to something else. Because it turns out that, okay, if it's not her coughing that disqualifies Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump has a different idea of what might accomplish that. Loser Donald has this to say about why Hillary Clinton should be disqualified based on her look. Let's watch.
You've often talked about Hillary Clinton's stamina.
Right.
You've even said she doesn't look presidential.
I really do believe that.
But yes. What do you mean by that?
Well, I just don't think she has a presidential look. And you need a presidential look. You have to get the job done. I think if she went to Mexico, she would have had a total failure. We had a big success.
But when you talk about her not looking presidential, are you talking about aesthetics here?
I'm talking about general. Hey, by the way, she says things about me that are horrible.
Okay, so he's saying horrible things, she's saying horrible things. That's just a symptom of the fact that we're in a shitty general election right now. But he's concerned with look, and she doesn't have the presidential look, which is fine. Let's consider it. Now, he has offered up some examples of what a presidential look might look like. So let's go to this first picture there. Perhaps you can look presidential doing this. Mocking a reporter for being disabled, perhaps. That's a good presidential look. Or what if you were to look presidential with, like, the symbols of America, like this. Oh, no, you're being rejected by a bald eagle. It's literally trying to kill you. If it could kill you, it would, because you don't look presidential. And then this next one, perhaps just, you know, like, about town. The Playboy president, perhaps. This is stupid, obviously.
This is insane.
And we're engaging in what he wants.
Isn't it kind of funny that a man whose face looks like a sphincter has the audacity to say that Hillary Clinton doesn't have a presidential look?
Yeah.
By the way,
what does that even mean?
Why are we even having a conversation about looks? Again, we have moved so far past discussing real policy ideas that now we're having conversations and covering freaking news stories about people's looks.
Donald
Trump is literally the ugliest man I've ever seen in my life, okay? Looking at his face makes me uncomfortable. Oh, fuck, Roger Ailes. All right,
he doesn't have a presidential look.
They're on par. They're on
par.
But I don't care. I don't care if Hillary Clinton is the most beautiful woman, the most unattractive woman. All of that stuff is irrelevant to me. Same with Donald Trump. What I care about and what American voters should care about is whether or not these politicians are going to serve their best interests. Now, right now, we have two candidates that will not serve our best interests, right? And part of the reason why is because Americans are sheep that buy into these ridiculous news stories. And part of the reason why they're sheep is because we have the mainstream media covering stupid-ass stories like this. Mm. And by the way, David Muir has the best hair. He is very good-looking.
I was with you up until the end there. He does have nice hair. He looks presidential, actually. And the thing, I think that there is a little bit more substance to this because I do think he's saying look, and he probably means physical look, but let's say he means, because he referenced she said horrible things.
Yeah.
So here's the problem with modern elections in the age of social media, is that everybody, to get followers and to have their message be spread, needs to be smart, snarky and kind of a dick online. So Trump obviously is the best at that. But Hillary Clinton's got plenty of snarky, kind of dickish tweets that go out. The only people who didn't, I haven't seen Gary Johnson do anything like that, partially because I don't follow him on Twitter. And Bernie Sanders, all of his tweets are basically the same thing. I want to live in a country where the needs of the many are what we push for or whatever. That's what we need. You almost can't be presidential anymore because people reward non-presidential behavior.
Do you think there is ever going to be a point where posting those types of things on social media will be frowned upon and candidates will be discouraged from doing so? Because I agree with you. I mean, the type of snarkiness that you see on Twitter right now among, you know, the presidential candidates and also congressional candidates in some cases, like, disgusts me.
Yeah.
Right?
Including from me, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Because when you simply state something factual,
do well on Twitter, right? But who cares if it does well on Twitter or not? Okay? Twitter is not the end all be all of someone's credibility or legitimacy. I just think it's crazy that we're having a discussion about their looks right now. I mean, I get it. We've poked fun at the way Donald Trump looks, but how could you not?
That's good. Okay, well, why don't we move on to the debates, which
let's
are fast approaching. In fact, this week we have the first town hall, and let's get an idea about how the mainstream media is going to moderate these debates. Chris Wallace of Fox News is going to be the Fox News moderator at the Las Vegas debate, the presidential debate, which is coming up in October. And so the question needs to be asked, what sort of moderator will he be if he sees people lying on the stage? If either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump says something that he knows not to be true, how will he approach that? And he answered here.
What do you do if they make assertions that you know to be untrue?
That's not my job.
That's not
I do not believe that it's my job to be a truth squad. It's up to the other person to catch them on that. But I don't view my role as truth squatting. I think that's a step too far, and if people want to do it after the debate, fine. It's not my role.
I love that truth squatting is now a verb. So thanks to that, we now have hashtag truth squad goals. Now, maybe this is presumptuous of me. I would like the moderators to be the truth squad. Maybe you disagree, but feel free to jump in.
Why do we have moderators then? Like, okay, then we don't need you.
Why don't we have a monkey?
We don't exactly. Why don't we just have a monkey, or how about even better, my dog Charlie, to moderate the debate?
Why don't
It'll make
we
it a little
have,
more interesting, right?
Why don't we just have a screen where it shows tweets asking questions? So what's the purpose of a human with human judgment? I understand if his response was, I'm going to do the best I can, but it's impossible for me to catch all the lies. But the question was, if you know they're lying, and he says, that has nothing to do with me, then you are useless to us. That is the only reason you're on the stage. And it's not like some people haven't done it. I believe it was Univision, or might have been Telemundo, one of the two had a debate where they were, I think it was the Democrats,
yes,
actually, and they were
yes.
live fact-checking. And Megyn Kelly...
Awesome.
Megyn Kelly did, and I think it might have been some other Fox people as well. What they did was, they didn't just say, if a lie happens, then I'll quick Google it. They knew the lies that the presidential candidates were habitually telling, so she was prepared with information to rebut his lie.
Yes.
Chris Wallace has 2 months to do that work.
That's the point of a moderator. If you think that your job as a moderator is simply to ask the questions and then sit back, well, then you're useless, right? And so don't go parading around as a newsman, as someone who likes to spread truth, when you have, like, this weird, like, sick reaction to, you know, explaining what the truth is or demanding the truth during these debates. This is not a joke, right? Like, the debates, these town halls, they're important because Americans are watching and they want to know who the best candidate is. So if you have two candidates up on that stage just spouting one lie after another and you don't have people fact-checking, mm-hmm. well, then they're just going to believe what these politicians are saying, and unfortunately, they're not going to be informed voters. Look, we see that on so many levels. We see it in political ads where, for some reason, it's the only type of advertisement in this country where people are allowed to lie and there are no consequences for it.
Yeah.
Right? If a major corporation or small business or any private industry puts out an ad where they lie even a little bit, there are consequences for that. There are laws against false... Theoretically. There are supposed to be consequences against false advertising. In politics, they can put out an ad lying about whatever the hell they want, and there are no consequences. It's
yeah.
insane. And now couple that with these ridiculous so-called debate moderators that aren't doing their jobs. Then you're useless, Chris Wallace, okay? I'd rather have, like, a cute animal do your job than have
your... Like Charlie.
Yeah, it would be awesome to watch Charlie moderate that, right? I feel like he'd be even more effective at moderating than Chris Wallace would.
Yeah.
Brought up at the end, and that second part where he said, it's fine if other sources want to do it afterwards and fact check and tell them where they went wrong, but this is just part of the system. So after other entities start fact checking and tell people what they did wrong, then in comes maybe these same moderators, maybe someone from his network, go, you know, that liberal media decides to
yep.
tell me that Donald Trump lied yesterday at the
yeah.
at the debate, and now they're going to say he did this and did that. So the system is allow them to lie, let it sink in so you believe the BS. Then after that happens, someone's going to fact check him, and then you disprove the fact checkers or try and discredit the fact checkers and their reasoning for what they're doing. Oh, they're doing it because they hate America. Oh, because they hate Donald Trump. So now it turns into disproving these guys, and it stays with these people.
Yeah.
And for him to not know how that's how the system works,
he knows.
He does.
He knows.
Well,
go ahead.
It's a natural consequence of the fact that for him, for a lot of the people in the news, especially in Fox News, there aren't facts. Facts don't exist. There are opinions you agree with and opinions you disagree with. And that's pretty much it. And who are we to say what's actually true about the world? This is a little spoiler alert. I know that it's not until October, but at that debate, Donald Trump will lie and Hillary Clinton will lie.
Absolutely.
And it will not be difficult to figure out what lies they're going to tell. Because it's not like politicians Hillary Clinton a little bit more than Donald Trump, it's not like they talk about such a broad range of topics in any given week. They have stump speeches and they have canned responses to their questions. They use the same stats. They tell the same lies. You can be prepared for the three most common lies. I know that Trump is going to say something about how many Mexicans are coming in. You could maybe prepare for that. He's going to say that Mexico is going to pay for the wall. That's not actually going to happen. So you could be prepared for this, and obviously the same version of those for Hillary Clinton. It's not difficult.
Man, members of the media are nothing more than a joke. Chris Wallace is a joke, okay? And
he's better than a lot of them.
I know.
On Fox News.
Well, that's not saying much. But one thing that I do want to add is, during the election in 2012, Candy Crowley from CNN, she's a political contributor to CNN, she had the audacity to correct something that Mitt Romney said. And that was a huge news story for a week straight, with people tearing her apart for doing her job, right? You're supposed to do your job. I don't care if it's a Democrat who's lying or a Republican that's lying. As a member of a media, as someone who identifies as a journalist, it is your obligation, it is, you know, your ethical obligation to hold them accountable and to reveal what the facts are. Otherwise, there's no point in having a debate. There really isn't.
Yeah.
It's just a huge advertisement for both candidates so they can say whatever the hell they want.
Yeah. And look, as JR alluded to, there are going to be other organizations which are going to do the fact-checking, your PolitiFacts and stuff like that, which we might have problems with at certain points, but at least they're doing the research. They care about what is accurate. We will also be doing live commentary of all these debates, and we will be attempting to assert the truth when it's circumvented as much as possible. So hopefully tune in and we can avoid some of what you will miss out if you watch it just on Fox. Anyway, that's unfortunately all the time that we have for the first hour. But after this little break, we're going to swing back around to Anna Kasparian taking charge for the second hour.
Yes. Lots of really great stories, including the insane amount of money that Fox News is paying Gretchen Carlson in the settlement.
Yeah.
Drops.
All right. Tweet us about those. We'll see you in just a few.